The committee will come to order. There is a quorum present, and Representative Lilly moves to approve the minutes from March 23rd, 2016. Are there any additions, corrections, and changes? Hearing none. All those in favor of the motion to approve the minutes, say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. Members, this morning we're going to start with Representative Carlson, Bill House File 2533. And I don't see any amendments, Representative Carlson.
No amendments, Mr. Chairman.
All right. So whenever you're ready, Representative, please begin.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, this is a bill that restructures the property tax refunds for senior citizens and the disabled. And this was drawn to my attention by an older citizen. And what it attempts to do, or what it would do, is when you get your property tax statement, you could file immediately for your property tax refund and then use that refund to pay your property taxes. The first payment, which would be due May 15th, you'd get your refund before that, and so it would reduce the financial burden on the taxpayers in those two categories. And the same thing would happen in the fall for the second payment. You would get your refund prior to when the taxes are due. This is a bill that, if you are supportive of it in this committee, should be referred then to the tax committee. And if someone has a question about the fiscal implications, the way that operates is that we get the revenue note from Department of Revenue when a bill appears in the tax committee, so there wouldn't be one available here. There would be, because of the timing, there would be a one-time shift for some of those payments in terms of the tax year, but then it would level out in the future. It couldn't. The shift wouldn't create a overall financial burden, but it would shift it from one biennium into the current biennium if the bill were enacted. So that's it in a nutshell, and the philosophy behind it is to try to give some relief to those folks with fixed incomes.
All right, thank you, Representative Carlson, and I apologize, I didn't move the bill before, so I'll do that now. I move that House File 2533 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on the bill? All right, seeing none, are there any questions from members? Okay, Representative Carlson, any final comments?
Well, no, but I did, in terms of testimony, I did talk to Department of Revenue, and they said that they planned on testifying before the tax committee if the bill arrived there. So we will be hearing from the department at that point.
All right. Thank you, Representative Carlson. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2533 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say no. Motion prevails, and House File 2533 is re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, I believe I see Representative Poppy there. If we could have her come down next. And while she's coming down, I will move that House File 3009 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. We have the bill before us, and I understand that there is a DE1 amendment, and that's an author's amendment.
Yes,
is that
is.
Right? Okay,
yes,
I will move the DE1 amendment then for Representative Poppy. Introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And actually, I have a second amendment as well that would go for the DE1. So it is the A1 amendment. So if you would also move that one. Mr. Chair, please.
All right. If there's no objection, I'd like to adopt the DE1 and then go to the amendment, if that works.
That would be fine.
All right. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. the DE1 as amendment is adopted. And now I will move the A1 amendment. Representative Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a caregiver support program bill. It is designed to create, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, it is designed to create a non-medical, social, community-based respite program that would allow caregivers to be able to take their loved one to a community-based setting and be able to have some time away from the person in need of care. And it is primarily for people who have dementia, Alzheimer's, related illnesses that are created due to some mental incapacity. So it is designed to allow for some time away, and it would allow for the caregiver to also, they can have time away, and the person who is receiving the care to have a little bit of opportunity to interact socially with others in a community-based setting. So with me today, I do have Carrie Benson, and I'd like her to introduce herself and be able to provide some testimony regarding the bill.
All right. Welcome to the committee. If you could please introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Carrie Benson. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board on Aging, and I'd like to thank Representative Poppe for her leadership in this area and for introducing this bill. The Minnesota Board on Aging is a 25-member governor-appointed board designated as a state unit on aging for the purposes of administering the federal Older Americans Act funds. The Board on Aging receives the Older Americans Act funds from the U.S. Administration for Community Living. The board distributes the funds to its regional designated area agencies on aging to support the delivery of in-home and supportive services to adults age 60 and older to help them age well and live well at home. These services include ones such as home-delivered meals and help with household chores. A portion of the funds are also designated to provide support to family caregivers. Minnesota has 7 area agencies on aging. 6 of them are regionally located, geographically located, covering each of the regions in the state. Another area agency on aging serves 4 of the tribes in the northern half of the state. The area agencies on aging undergo a competitive process, request for proposal process, to distribute the Older Americans Act funds in their regions. So they each receive a portion of the Older Americans Act funds each year and then undergo an annual competitive review process for those funds. Each year, the area agencies receive approximately $1.5 million in federal funds that are devoted to the caregiver support services. And they fund a variety of services within that. The funds are used to provide respite services, counseling, support groups, training and education, educational workshops. And just under about 3,000 caregivers are served annually with the funds. And most do participate in those educational workshops, the training and education. About a third do receive respite services through the Older Americans Act funds. The proposed bill would supplement the existing caregiver support services funding and programming currently out in the regions with the focus on supporting family caregivers with Alzheimer's disease or related dementias. This focus in the proposed respite model, the social non-medical community-based model, would help the Board on Aging and the area agencies on aging address a growing gap in the existing service system. Through the annual gaps analysis study process that the Department of Human Services undertakes, respite care has been identified as one of the top gaps in services statewide. And we also know that most older adults prefer to receive help with personal care, household chores from family members and friends, and that this type of help supports, you know, really helps them continue to live independently for as long as possible and in their own homes. Over half of family caregivers indicate that they do provide help to a family member who has issues, concerns with memory loss, with thinking, the ability to make decisions, and the cause of these issues may be Alzheimer's disease or related dementia. So this is a growing area of concern and challenge for us, and one where there is additional supports needed for the caregivers who are playing such a critical role in helping their family member. Research shows that providing a break to a family caregiver, such as through providing respite, as with this model being proposed today, it helps caregivers maintain their role longer while also maintaining their own health and well-being. So I'd just like to say thank you again for hearing this bill and for Representative Poppe's leadership in this area.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Benson, for the testimony. Before I forget, we'll adopt the A1 amendment. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say no. The A1 is adopted. Now we'll move to member questions. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I just have one question. I'm hearing a lot about age 60. And I'm wondering if that's written stone or if that can be a little flexible in that. I talked to a young man yesterday, and by young man I mean my son's age, and his dad was in his, I feel like, gulp, middle 50s when he was diagnosed and was 63 when he passed. So my question is, you know, would you be flexible? Because I think a family who's has a member that's more like in their 50s is probably more in need of getting away and doing some things than a family that, you know, maybe is just mom and dad or husband and wife. So when you say 60, that was, you know, a huge flag for me. Would it be flexible enough to take somebody who's younger than that?
Ms. Benson.
Chair, Representative Tice, that's a great question. And yes, the flexibility is there for in terms of designating the population that would be targeted for these funds. The benefit of adding them to the existing system that we have in place to distribute the Older Americans Act funds would still be in place, you know, the administrative efficiencies. And so with that, then there could be some specificity in terms of the population.
Follow-up, Representative Tice. Okay. Any more questions for this testifier? See none. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify to the bill from the audience? Okay, see none. Any final questions from members? Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for hearing. A lot of these bills today are really really good bills. It's kind of neat to see the diversity of bills coming from the members and really great ideas. And thank you, Representative Poppe. I think this is a great idea that you're trying to bring statewide, and I appreciate your effort on this.
All right. Any final questions? Seeing none, Representative Poppe, any final remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I do appreciate the opportunity to talk about this important bill, and it is an important service that I think that we can have statewide. Lutheran Social Services, actually, in the Fargo-Moorhead area, has used a similar model, and so it's really to advance that statewide in all parts of the state. And we do have in the packet from AARP, as well as Lutheran Social Services, letters of support. So I do appreciate the opportunity today. Thank you for the time. Thank you for moving the bill and the amendments, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Poppe. And with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 3009, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. Motion prevails, and House File 3009, as amended, is re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members.
Okay, we'll start, unless Representative Pearson's here, and I do not see him, we'll start heading down the agenda as it was set. Representative Daniels, then, that would mean your bill is up next, House File 3438. And while he's making his way down, Representative Daniels moves that House File 3438 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Higher Education Policy and Finance. We have the bill before us, and I'm not aware of any amendments. So, Representative Daniels, when you're ready, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair, for hearing this bill, and thank you, committee. Seems like I kind of know some of you folks here, so it's kind of like being at home. The bill that we're presenting today is just to try to get maybe a change of image for people who are going into the senior care field. A lot of things have changed in the last 20 or 30 years. I'm most familiar with the manufacturing industry from 20 or 30 years ago. It was pretty physically draining and typically not very well lit or very clean manufacturing facilities. And today's facilities are quite a bit different. They're very clean, very orderly, a lot of robotics to help with the everyday tasks. And a lot of things have changed in 20 to 30 years in the manufacturing and the tool and die industry. But also our things have changed in our nursing care industry. When I brought my mother-in-law into a senior care or a nursing facility after she got to Alzheimer's, it was a remodeled hospital. And to say the least, it wasn't very homey. It was still a hospital, just with a little bit of different decorations in it. And it was hard to leave her there. But if you remember last year, we actually had one of our committee meetings down in Faribault at the senior living. And when you walked into that lobby, there was this big grand fireplace right in the middle of the room, nicely carpeted, very nice woodworking, this beautiful staircase wrapping around the left-hand side as you go in, and just a really nice facility with all the amenities. So much different than when my mother-in-law was put into nursing care. And then later that summer, Chair Schumacher and I got to tour the Medford assisted living, and that was quite a facility. It's more like a museum than it was probably a assisted living. It had Bentley the butler. It had a little sitting room for like a 50s theme. It had like a Coca-Cola bottle dispenser. It had a what do you call it? The boom bar, or not the
jukebox,
thank you. Jukebox with playing the 45 record, still works. You know, just everything themed for the 50s, Coca-Cola theme, and another sitting room, and just very well decorated. Each room was like a maybe an apartment or a house, part of a house that was very warm and welcoming. And so much different, again, than what my mother-in-law was in at the time. So basically, I guess the bill is going to be trying to put a new face onto the caregiving field, and see if we can maybe do some type of promotion that would get people enticed to get involved in being a part of the industry of taking care of our seniors. And with that, I will turn it over to Carrie and Thurnbull and Aaron Bowie for more information on the bill.
All right, welcome to the committee. If you could please introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Aaron Bowie. I'm Director of Government Affairs for Care Providers of Minnesota, here today on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. I want to start out by thanking Representative Daniels for bringing this bill forward. As we all know, Minnesota's population is aging, and we are going to need more and more people to care for our seniors in the years to come. We think this bill is a great first step in helping us to raise career awareness for careers in long-term care and for growing the pipeline of our workforce. So thank you, Representative Daniels.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Carrie Thurlow, Senior Vice President of Advocacy at Leading Age, and also here on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. I, too, want to thank Representative Daniels for bringing forward this legislation. We did a lot last year, really focused on training and retention of caregivers, and did a lot of good work last year, from the reform that we did on reimbursements to reforming scholarship programs and nurse loan forgiveness. That really was about keeping the people we have in the industry, because we need to keep all of those. But we don't have enough people going into senior care today to take care of the seniors we have today, much less the growing number of seniors we will have in the future. On our most recent survey of our members, we saw that actually vacant positions continue to rise. And the number one reason given was that there are not applicants applying for jobs in senior care. And so we want to thank Representative Daniels for bringing this forward. This represents a public-private partnership to really enhance and grow the pipeline of available paid caregivers, partnering with HealthForce Minnesota, a proven partner in higher ed with the industry and other stakeholders, to develop those promotional materials appropriate for kids in K-12 settings, dislocated workers, rural settings, those workers that are high potential workers for our industry to help care for the growing senior population and prepare for the future. So with that, we're happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay, is there anyone else who wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll move to member questions. Questions from members. Representative Considine.
It's not so much a question as a comment. We have this bill to develop educational materials. Later on, we'll have Representative Pearson's to get an advisory task force to see if we need a division of healthy education. Representative Tice has one health information technology grant program established. Last time we had another grant program going to look like the Wilder Foundation. We sure are doing this kind of piecemeal. We don't seem to have an overall direction that we're going. It's like somebody, oh, this would be a good idea. Let's put in another bill. I'm a little concerned about that. Just we don't seem to have a direction that we're going in. Thank you.
All right, seeing no further comments, Representative Daniels, any final thoughts on your bill?
Well, just again, thank you, Chair. Thank you, members, for hearing the bill. We think this is an important step in getting more people involved in the senior care industry, and we just hope to put a new face on it so we can attract more people into that industry. It is changing, just like the other industries that are changing, and we just hope to be a positive influence on some of the younger people and displace people that maybe they look for this for a career. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. With that, Representative Daniels renews his motion that House File 3438 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Higher Education, Policy, and Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion prevails and House File 3438 is re-referred to the Committee on Higher Education, Policy, and Finance. Thank you, Representative Daniels. And since I said we were going to go in order, I am going to change that right away again and go with Representative Tice's bill, House File 3466. And while she makes her way forward, Representative Tice moves that House File 3466 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Reform. We have the bill before us, and I'm not aware of any amendments, Representative Tice. So when you're ready, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Actually, I do have a plan, and part of that plan is bringing the nursing home and caregivers into the current era, times that we are in now, and that for me means a lot of electronically getting them up to speed. So what this bill does, briefly, is it appropriates $2 million in grants administered through DHS to help nursing homes and assisted living settings comply with the Minnesota electronic health record mandate. I think it's pretty sad that we still have to depend on fax machines, and we still have to depend on physically getting the paperwork to nursing homes in order to have the records accessible. So I really think this is something that just needs to get done. I don't care. Our health communities need to do that. I was just sharing that one of the programs that I'm going through right now through my healthcare system is really cool, and then I access my chart and I'm looking at my meds, my numbers when I do blood testing to see what my readings are and all that kind of good stuff, or any special instructions. That's something that should be done in the nursing home arena as well, so that family members may be able to look at to see for sure what everybody's doing. And with that, I don't want to take up a lot of time. I'd like to pass it over to. Okay, you're looking at each other, so I'm going to pass it over to Todd Bergstrom.
All right, welcome to the committee. If you could please introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Tice, members of the committee, my name is Todd Bergstrom, and I work with Care Providers in Minnesota, and with me is Danny Salisbury with Leading Age Minnesota, and together we represent or collaborate as a long-term care imperative. So as Representative Tice mentioned, Minnesota has two really big goals. They are to get electronic e-prescribing and interoperable electronic health records. And what this grant program would do is allow nursing homes and assisted living settings that participate in the elderly waiver program to adopt and utilize electronic health records, achieve interoperability, and most importantly, improve resident safety and health, reduce errors, and readmissions to hospitals.
All
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Danielle Salisbury, and like Todd said, I am with Leading Age Minnesota and also here on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. This bill will provide assistance to long-term care providers, regardless of where they are in their journey from the 20th century written records to the 21st century electronic health records. We believe these activities will enable nursing facilities and assisted living establishments to join the health information technology efforts in order to generate cost savings, create gains in efficiency, and improve patient outcomes. Importantly, transitions from one setting to the next is a very vulnerable time for older adult population, and we believe that electronic health records will help ease these transitions wherever they may be.
All right. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on the bill? Seeing none, we'll move to our questions. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I just have a general question for you, Mr. Chair. So the bills that we're passing today that are being referred to Health and Human Services Reform, what is the path of those? I mean, the path is the wrong word. Since I don't think HHS reform is going to be able to hear these bills because they'll be after deadline. So I'm just wondering if you're aware that of something that I'm not, that there's going to be an additional meeting or what? I mean, if this bill just goes to HHS reform, is it going to be able to be heard now? Can you answer
Representative Liebling, I can't speak to that. I haven't spoken with Representative Mack on these bills in particular to see what her intent is.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, so I mean, actually, I'm a little bit never been really clear about which things from this committee go to reform and whether some can just go on their own to the floor. I mean, does everything from here that relates to, I mean, obviously the bill that I think it was Representative Daniels' bill went to a different committee, but I mean, the health bills are going, all of them are going to reform? Is that what we're doing?
Representative Liebling, a good majority of them do, just because of the overlap in the areas.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, I guess I'm just curious because we have a lot of bills on the agenda today, and a number of them are going to reform. And it's just curious to me that, you know, we're up against the deadline, and it almost seems, in a way, fruitless to hear them. You know, I mean, I'm delighted that you're going to hear my bill today, and a lot of these are great bills. But anyway, so I did have another issue about this bill specifically. And that is, Representative Tice, I'm just a little wondering, I'm totally with you on the goal here. I think it's, you know, great that we should get everybody up to speed on the electronic, nothing about that. But you're proposing to give quite a bit of additional money to the same facilities that we just, in the last session, changed the whole funding formula and poured lots and lots, millions and millions of dollars into this industry and put it on a cost basis. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering why, you know, given that we have really limited resources in the state and that we totally ignored the home and community-based providers, and we heard the bill yesterday in another committee, Representative Hamilton's bill, about that, and that also is going to be extremely expensive to bring those providers up a little bit to be even equivalent with what we did for nursing homes. So I'm just wondering, you know, why you want to go now with an additional block of money for this industry that I presume could probably roll it in somewhat to their cost basis if they were going to do some of this upgrading.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Liebling. You know, they probably could, but I think that I don't want to undermine the good work that we did in that I don't want them to have to take money again out of wages and staff hours and improvements that they have needed to make. When I look at, you know, what the Act did originally, and it helped out other clinics, there were grants available to other clinics, I just want the nursing homes to be treated in the same manner. It shouldn't have to come out of their budgets in that way. I think if other institutions were allowed to get grants, then we should do the same to nursing homes. And I would say that I think, and possibly, I know we're close to deadlines, but I think the greatest service we can do is let everybody know that what the great need is for our nursing homes and our long-term care. And yes, we are more addressing nursing homes, but I think it just shows that's how much need is here in our state and how much work we have to do. And I would sit here all day and if it just made everybody aware of what the great need is and how we haven't been funding nursing homes and long-term care like we should have, I'll do it. Because it's just, it's really heartbreaking to me when I go to different places and hear how they can't take care of folks. And so, like you, I wish every bill could go through, but I think the greatest service we do at this committee is just bring awareness to what really needs to happen and for how far back they are from the rest of our services. So, but with that, I really don't want to take more money out of what we've given them. I can't tell you, and I'm sure you've heard too, every nursing home is so grateful for the money they've gotten to play catch up, to do the wages. And I don't want to have this happen, that they have to take some of that money out again and maybe cut some hours for somebody. I would rather they be treated just like everyone else and have opportunities to grants.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Tice, I mean, no criticism to you for bringing your bill. Absolutely not. You know, I mean, it was more of a question about why we're bringing them so late or why we don't have another, since they apparently have to go to reform and there's no opportunity for that today. But absolutely no criticism of you for that. But I would just, I guess maybe I don't fully understand then what the reform was that we did, but what I do understand is that we put nursing homes on they're like a forecast program now. They're being treated differently than pretty much anything we do in health and human services. Nobody else gets, medical assistance is a forecast program. But now nursing home funding is a forecast program. So they're being treated, I would say, much preferentially over other things. And then as far as taking it out of wages and so on, I mean, I don't know, maybe there could be a cash flow problem for some facilities, but I would think that they would get reimbursed for this if they put money into their system through the reform that happened. Maybe Mr. Bergstrom can comment on that if I'm wrong, but, you know, but anyway, you know, well, maybe you could answer that.
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, members of the committee. So a couple of items. So first, this establishing this grant program follows kind of the same path that the Department of Health has engaged in for the last 10 years, where through a mix of state and federal funds, they've seeded projects. And what I'll note is a lot of this is collaborative efforts outside of, say, the walls of the nursing home, where you're bringing in other players in the community. And our challenge has been for post-acute settings like nursing facilities and I'll note assisted living, elderly waiver providers, it's very difficult to find that seed money to play in that space. And so what this is meant to do is, and kind of the strategy the state has had, is to seed these and then move on. And that's really what this is intending to do.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all.
Okay. Any further questions from members? Seeing none. Any final comments, Representative Tice?
It's a great bill.
All right. And with that, Representative Tice renews her motion that House File 3466 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say no. Motion prevails and House File 3466 is re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. Thank you, Representative Tice. Next, we'll take up Representative Pearson's bill, House File 3036. And as he makes his way forward, Representative Pearson, first, welcome to the committee. I'll move that House File 3036 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. We have the bill before us, and I'm not aware of any amendments. Representative Pearson, when you're ready, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and thank you, Representative Liebling, for the great segue. This bill actually really focuses on what I think you're getting to the heart of, and that's the fact that aging in a lot of ways is treated a lot differently within the Minnesota Department of Health. So I really appreciate that comment, and that's actually what we're hoping to do. So with that, I'll turn it over to my testifiers. I think they've got a little video that they'll queue up here shortly for you.
Yes.
Go ahead. Sorry.
All right. Welcome to the committee. If you could please introduce yourself.
I missed the dress rehearsal, so it's my fault, not theirs.
It's an honor to have you.
It's
Tom Huntley is my name, as some of you know, and it's a pleasure to be back in my favorite room in the Capitol. And I will say, however, this is the first time I've worn a tie in 1 year and 3 months. This bill basically just sets up a task force to determine whether the Department of Health should have a division of health aging. We had a commissioner's task force, which I was one of the co-chairs, on age-related hearing loss and healthy aging. We had a whole bunch of, on that task force, we had healthcare professionals, consumers, care providers, state agencies, and insurers. One of the more interesting ones to me, you always learn something you didn't know, and on that committee was a member of the Veterans Administration, the federal group. And I had not known it, but loss of hearing is a huge, huge issue in the Veterans Committee community. We learned a lot about the impact of age-related hearing loss and its wide-ranging impacts on persons' physical, cognitive, and mental health. We will show a brief video in a minute or two that shares some of that information. What we found, and we had a gentleman, Dr. Frank Lin from Johns Hopkins, who is one of the leading experts on aging and hearing. And he had some very good data. Some of it is preliminary, I must say, but it looks like seniors that don't have hearing aids and are having trouble with hearing end up in the nursing home a lot faster than those that have their ears taken care of. And so the actual result of that is it costs more money to take care of them in a nursing home than it does in their own homes where they would like to stay. We realize that the Department of Health does not currently have a division that focuses on seniors, and everybody in this committee knows that seniors are the biggest cost driver in most of the state budget, at least in the Health and Human Services area. And this just sets up a task force in that department to see whether or not they should have a division that relates to the health of seniors. Let's see. So we feel that creating a division of healthy aging was one of the task force's recommendations, and we're recommending that they have a task force to figure out how to do that with the Department of Health. And with that, I'll turn it over to the video.
In the age of commercial space flight and instant global communication, it's staggering just how common age-related hearing loss really is.
I got to the place where I would say, well, what did you say?
I began to feel self-conscious, and I would be in meetings and I could not hear.
You're not able to socialize and be a part of the group.
And people with hearing loss frequently isolate themselves and they live in this frustration.
Well, I never noticed until I was told I should go in and get it checked.
How are you doing today?
I'm fine.
For people who have hearing loss, insurance rarely covers it and the cost is very high.
There has been a general unawareness among the general public, but also among healthcare professionals of all kinds, about how destructive hearing loss can be. And that's why early detection and early intervention is tremendously important.
Just generally, what brings you in today?
I had trouble.
I think we now understand that hearing loss, it's not a cosmetic condition. It's not, treating it isn't like coloring your hair or getting a facelift. It's a medical condition. Treating it is actually good for your physical and your mental health.
It's not just a personal health issue. It's a public health issue. And here's why.
Baby boomers are turning 65 at the rate of 8,000 a day, which is really an astonishing thought. The older we become, actually hearing loss becomes more frequent. Oftentimes that there is a lot of wear and tear on our, you know, hearing structures.
It's incredibly impactful for things like cognitive decline, our risk of dementia, falls, even preventing hospitalizations. That we're seeing that hearing loss is linked with all those outcomes very, very strongly.
After arthritis and heart disease, it's the third most common chronic condition affecting older adults. 2 out of every 3 of us will experience it personally once we're in our 70s. And of those, 2/3 have noticeable hearing loss before the age of 60.
Even though it is a usual part of aging, that it's not without consequence. We think it's a series of dominoes. And I mean, the 3 big dominoes which we sort of hypothesize or guess at right now is a few of them. So one is that when you have a hearing loss, right, it's a little bit of a misnomer. It's not so much you can't hear, that you can't understand. And the reason for that is your ear is sending a much more garbled signal to your brain. So understand right now that one of the dominoes is that when you can't hear well, then you're constantly putting a load on the brain. The brain is constantly having to dedicate more brain power, per se, more resources to constantly dealing with that degraded sound, right?
In my own work, became, you know, was so distracted by the effort to hear what was going on in the meeting that I really didn't have time to think about ideas and make contributions in a way that I had been able to earlier when I heard better.
At the same time, in many studies right now, we're seeing that for people who even have a mild hearing loss, that leads to faster changes in terms of the brain structure, that you're losing parts of the brain which handle sound, but then has cascading effects on other parts of the brain too that handle things like memory and learning.
In one study, adults with mild hearing loss were 2 times more likely to develop dementia than those without hearing loss. Adults with severe hearing loss were 5 times more likely. It's true. If you can't hear what's going on, your brain gets smaller, leading to depression, isolation, and even a measurable drop in your IQ.
And find the third domino, like you mentioned before, is the idea of social isolation, that if you can't hear well, that for many people, just subtly, you're less likely to want to go out and socialize with your friends.
One of the things that happens when you have hearing loss is it gets worse and worse, is that it gets very effortful to go out and, you know, be part of life. People tend to withdraw.
And those subtle effects of social disengagement, we know now are incredibly meaningful for maintaining our cognitive or physical functional health as we age. So we think that those are actually the 3 mechanistic pathways through which hearing loss can directly lead to adverse health outcomes as we age.
As hearing loss progresses, we do get more uneasy in social and professional situations. But many, many people with hearing loss are under the age of 60. They're still in the workforce. Many people over the age of 60 are still in the workforce.
I left my position as a medical group administrator after 30 years because of my hearing loss. It was difficult to deal with. I think, like everyone with hearing loss, we tried to hide it. And the hard thing about that is you're trying to function in a hearing world, and I started feeling like employers were thinking I was less intelligent or losing it, so it made my job very difficult.
This is what happened to me. I stopped contributing at meetings because I was never quite sure what I had heard, and I didn't want to answer inappropriately.
Hearing loss really is just the first domino in a much larger chain reaction. And all these dominoes together, they lead to increased healthcare costs and more medical interventions, all of which have a real impact on families, retirement plans, and state and federal budgets.
If you address the hearing loss early enough with good rehabilitative strategies, using hearing aids, things like that, can you prevent that decline from happening? That's a key question then.
We could delay the onset of dementia by even 1 year down the line. We would cut the incidence of dementia by 15%, which in the year 2025, 2050, is going to make an enormous financial difference.
The 1965 Medicare Act statutorily precludes coverage of hearing aids. And that was written at a time 50 years ago when it probably made sense. They weren't very effective back then. They weren't necessarily very expensive back then.
hearing aids these days can easily cost up to $4,000 for a single hearing aid. And since most hearing loss tends to be bilateral in both ears, so that means you need two hearing aids at $4,000 apiece.
In 50 years, a lot of things have changed in terms of the cost, in terms of how we know how effective they are for things even just maintaining our daily functioning and improving our quality of life, not to mention hopefully things like dementia. So I think that will cause reevaluation. And a bigger issue, I would say, is the current model of hearing healthcare. I mean, the average cost of pairing hearing aids is usually around anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000 nowadays. And there's so much sticker shock with that. If you go see an audiologist cannot be reimbursed for providing any type of rehabilitative services. They can only be reimbursed for providing diagnostics. So no one is incentivized to help the individual patient, the individual 65-year-old person. And that's the bitter irony there, is that the structure of the model right now is just not designed to provide what it should be doing.
For me, as an advocate for people with hearing loss, I say, we need to give them whatever is going to work for them at a price that they can afford.
You have to take personal ownership of knowing the issues, of knowing what to do about it, knowing why to do something about it. But at the same time, that has to be supported by a societal governmental infrastructure that allows those resources to be available.
All right, did you have further testimony, or are you ready to take questions?
We're all set.
All right, questions from members. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill at least is kind of all-encompassing. It gets us into a planning stage. I kind of like it. Though some of the stuff you're telling about hearing, I'm going to go back and talk to my doctor right away. Because
good idea.
Yeah, I can't. Granddaughters make fun of me. So, I like the idea of, and I also like that it's, 6-9 months, and we'll have an answer, because, again, this piecemeal approach just doesn't seem to be working for me anyway. So, thank you.
All right, any further questions from the members? Oh, yeah, Representative Keel.
Thank you, Chair Schumacher. A little contribution here. The conversation about aging. I have a mother who's completely deaf in one ear, partially in the other. In fact, she does not, if you don't have a hearing aid, and she really can't hear you at all. And that's been going on for years. She's in her later 70s. Early 60s, and the one thing I noticed, members, is that, and I think this is a great bill, the one thing I noticed is there's a lot of danger in, there's often when we're standing at a street corner and we're going to walk and she does not hear a car coming, there's no stoplight, and she will walk out into the car because she perceives it coming from the other direction, and sometimes I'm grabbing her to pull her back. Cognitively, I've never noticed any problems there. She does bookwork and stuff. But I really noticed in all the family that I have that has hearing loss, the depression as they age and cannot function as well is really rearing its head. As I notice, people just, like you said, are very isolated because they have difficulty hearing. They just choose, it's just too much effort. And so I think it's great that we're studying it. I wish that hearing aids would come down in cost. They're very expensive. And they're changing constantly. I think my mom has hers maybe a year or two, and the doctor is saying, we've got more advancements here. And one thing I've heard from all the family that has hearing aids, they're not perfect. They do not supply what we were God-given. And so I think when Mr. Huntley says that it also is effective in veterans, I wish there was a way for us to help protect those hearing loss, because not all of them are, I believe my mother's is genetic, but a lot of them are caused by life in general. You find a lot of farmers that are hard of hearing because of the constant noise of even tractors with cabs. I found myself, my ears buzzing after I walked away from that tractor because there just is that constant hum of a machine. So it is a very concerning issue, and hopefully we can help people to deal with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keel. Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, hello, Representative Huntley. It's good to see you. Thank you for the video. I was not aware of all of those impacts of hearing loss. That is quite astonishing, especially the connection with dementia. Wow. I mean, if we could impact that one, we're always talking about dementia because of the huge cost, so very important. So I just wanted to raise a question about an issue about the task force, because I've been raising this in about every committee. We see so many bills now for task forces. Everybody wants to set up a task force. And they're fine. I mean, I always say task forces can be very helpful, and they're great ways to, you know, start to deal with complex problems, no question about it. But every single one of them requires a great deal of legislative time, offline legislative time. And I just want to flag this for members again. I was talking about this yesterday. You know, we've seen several task forces that members want to do, all for great causes, but this one has four legislators on it. And, you know, that's great. But again, we're a part-time legislature. You know, to my knowledge, when we put legislators on task forces, a lot of the time they just don't show up because they're expected to do it on their own time without any compensation during the off time. And some people can do that and are really dedicated. And I've been on task forces that I thought were just fabulous. But I just think we need to be cognizant of how much we're asking from legislators to do for free outside of the regular legislative time, and how much, and you know, I know everybody wants to do it. People are not here for the money. We're all here because we love the work and we want to do as much of it as we can and solve as many problems as we can. But I just want to put it in everybody's mind that at some point we have to be realistic about how much we can really do as legislators outside of the legislative process. So with that, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Representative Liebling. Was there any response to that from the testifiers?
You know, I guess I would say that I happen to sit on two other committees with Representative Liebling, and I certainly have heard her bring that up with a high level of frequency. It certainly has merit. I think the value of the information that comes out of these task force is what drives the demand or the desire to set them up. And so, you know, not to defend the fact that we're obviously servants to the people, and I won't debate you that we're overcompensated in any way. But you know, I'll acknowledge that this is part of the work that we do, and I think I think a lot of people see the value of bringing the stakeholders together, the strongest voices and especially community leaders within the individual interests, and really trying to work on solutions. Sometimes our committee work, because of the formality and the style that we use, this type of committee isn't as well served for that. So I acknowledge what you've said with a high level of frequency, and I guess I would just say, you know, in the words of Winston Churchill, I think he said something like, democracy is the worst form of government until compared to all others. And so I would say the task force is probably a terrible way to do this until compared to all others as well.
Following off Churchill this morning, we have Representative Lilly. All right, Representative Caruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry for coming in late. I was taking care of a grandkid. I did catch the end of the video. One of the things that has, in addition to the fact that hearing aids are not paid for by Medicare, one of the things that has hampered people's use of hearing aids in the past is there has in the past been a certain stigma to using hearing aids. And this is kind of, you know, we can kind of compare that to wearing glasses. There used to be a little bit of stigma to wearing glasses, never as much as there was for hearing aids. particularly, I think, because hearing aids began as very, very bulky, obvious things that people had to use. My mother was the first child in her school to get glasses. And at that time, she was so incredibly nearsighted, she didn't know you should be able to see the hairs on people's heads or the leaves on trees or the blades of grass. And shot up from being a very mediocre student to the top of her class just from getting the glasses. Currently, we screen children for hearing problems. That's part of what we do, for school children. And we recognize that hearing loss is a major impediment to a child's education. And we make accommodations for that. But we haven't done that on the other end of life. And as people have already pointed out, it has a severe impact on people's ability to function in society. I don't know if someone already said this, forgive me if it's been said, but someone once asked Helen Keller, who was both deafened and blind, which was the greater impediment. And she said definitely being deaf, because it impedes your communication with people around you. But I think that just like we've jump-started other technologies by providing incentives or payments or whatever, wind technology, solar technology, things like that, one of the problems that stands in the way, the expense, is directly related to the small market. And the small market is directly related to the lack of lack of reimbursement for hearing aids. And so if we can find a way to help people purchase their hearing aids, more people will get them, the stigma will go away, and the technologies will improve, and the cost will come down. And those are all good things. So I think we need to find a way to do that. So I welcome this, first effort at trying to put all those problems together and work on it. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Yaruso. I'm so glad you said that, because my intentions are to, as soon as I can, actually find a way that we can get some reimbursement on hearing aids. My husband's been wearing hearing aids for over 10 years, and my mom and dad just got them last summer. And my mom, again, was having some depression issues and starting to check out of conversations and such. And what a difference it makes. In fact, my husband had gone in at one time. At first, he was only wearing one, and he had to have some work done on it. And it was right before Christmas, and he went in to go pick up his repaired hearing aid. But they decided it wasn't fixed enough, and so they sent him home without it. And I said, you go back and tell him you want a loaner, because it was really hard, to talk to him again. Well, now he has two, so very seldom do they take both of them at the same time. But it's ridiculous. I mean, $7,000 for him to have hearing aids to hear. And so at that time, we had an HSA that we were able to save enough money to have him basically paid for, because I think he went like 6-7 years before needing new ones. So I'm going to be having a lot of discussions about it, so stay tuned. You will see me bringing something to get him taken care of, because I think it's ridiculous that we don't take care of it. And when you want to talk about veterans, I mean, it's a big issue with those as well. So my intentions are to do that, so I would love to have some conversations with whoever's interested. Thank you.
All right, any other questions from members? Seeing none, is there anyone else who wishes to testify on the bill? Seeing no one, closing comments. Representative Pearson and testifiers.
I don't think I could say it any better than all of your great commenters here within your committee, and I appreciate your time, and thank you, members, and Mr. Chair.
All right, with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 3036 be recommended to be re-referred to Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say no. Motion prevails and House File 3036 is referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All right, members, and before we get into the next bill, my better angels have tapped me on the shoulder and convinced me that maybe we should do a little bit of a change to where some of these bills were going here. And so I would like to make one motion to change some of the re-referrals, and then we can continue with moving to the right directions, or with another direction with the rest of them. And if Chair Mack is upset with me, I'll take the brunt for the rest of you on that front, because she is quite fierce. And so I would like to make a motion to reconsider House Files 3438, 3466, and 3009 as amended to be reconsidered. And then we'll make a motion to move those to Health and Human Service Finance Committee. All those in favor of reconsideration, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. These bills are reconsidered, and so I would move that House Files 3438, 3466, and 3009 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. Those bills have been moved. Thank you, members, for your indulgence on that. Next, I think we'll take up my House File. I will move that House File 3063 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. And we will change chairs here quickly and go through this bill.
Representative Schumacher, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 3063 is introduced as part of a solution to address the shortages of CNAs in Minnesota. This bill would allow for adult education programs to be reimbursed for CNA training costs if the trainee is successfully employed after 90 days in a skilled nursing center. Adult education serves a population that could give a larger CNA pool to employees for our nursing homes. Just a few notes on the concept as a whole. This bill was originally started as an amendment onto Representative Baker's long-term care workforce bill from last year, but it was inadvertently omitted from the conference committee report. We revisited the concept this last fall during the Healthcare Workforce Commission, where we examined the opportunities for adult education to help us grow our healthcare workforce. With me today is Pat Thomas, who has not hugged me yet today, which is a pretty big feat for her. And she is the Adult Basic Education Director from the Marshall area, and she can further describe the bill and the concept.
Good morning. My name is Pat Thomas, and as Joe mentioned, I'm the Adult Education Director down in Marshall, Minnesota. We served about 500 persons last year, and we provided, with our partners, six separate CNA classes down in Marshall. We served 66 individuals, the majority of whom were all supported financially through the Pathway to Prosperity grants that are available, but our program supported 11 of those individuals because there were no grant funds available. I believe at the current time, my program is the only one that's going forward and assisting people in going forward in getting their CNA by paying their tuition, the book costs, their test out fees within this state. This bill would allow adult education programs throughout the state the ability to provide additional training for more students. And if the student is successfully employed after 90 days, they would be eligible for some reimbursement of the hard costs back. Currently, I'm sure you're aware that if I as an individual went and paid for my own CNA training, was successfully employed after 90 days in a nursing home, the nursing home would reimburse me back for all costs, tuition, test out fees, and book fees. I would like to share with you in our adult education program why our students are sometimes some of the best employees you're going to have in healthcare. We provide additional services to people beyond just the regular CNA class. We upgrade their math and computer skills. We introduce vocabulary and concepts relative to the CNA field prior to their going into the college class. We help them with resume, job interview skills. We assure that they get registered on Minnesota Works. We help them with budgeting literacy skills, as people who have financial skills are better employees. Our ABE teacher goes into the college class with them to assist any person who's struggling within the CNA class. We do employer panels. with our local employers. We give them soft skills, employability skills, and with all these available services, what our employers say are our students are the best employees that they can hire, and we also have a close to 100% completion rate because of the additional services that are provided to people. I believe if this bill is passed, more adult programs, adult education programs would, like we do down in Marshall, take the initiative to be able to put more CNA trainings, make more CNA trainings available, and to provide some of the funding when grant funding isn't available to support the financial costs for the students. I would draw to your attention that there's risk in this bill. If adult education determines to go forward and train individuals, if they're not hired for 90 days after their completion, I get nothing for putting these people through these classes. What this does is it provides a good check and balance to make sure that we're using these funds wisely. It also means that up front, I'm going to make sure the people that I am putting through training are motivated, that they are well trained, and that they're very employable. I would mention that in our class, when we started in January, we started two CNAs classes. Of the 30 individuals we were serving, one person had the ability to go pay for their own tuition. See, these are our folks that we're serving. They do not have the capacity to get on that first step of the healthcare field. We have found within the people we have put forward and are successful in CNA, many have gone on to be LPNs and many have gone on to be RNs. So anyway, I would suggest that this bill is a good way to start putting more people out into the healthcare field, as the immigrants, the refugees, and the lower skilled people are going to be part of the answer to keeping our nursing homes staffed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Thomas. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify to this bill? Seeing none, Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to mention I really appreciate this. Last year when we were looking at the big bill, I had an amendment to make sure that we took care of tuition costs for CNAs. This is an advancement of that, so I think it's a great idea.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Yaruso. Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Schumacher, I'm a little confused by this. Shouldn't this be going through K-12 education? Adult basic education comes under the purview of the education division.
Representative Schumacher.
Right. Representative, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Newton. This doesn't change the scope of what the adult education program is doing. All it does is set up that the nursing facilities would be reimbursed, or the certified boarding care homes would be doing the reimbursement for those programs.
Representative Newton.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. Normally, adult basic education is funded by the Department of Education and not by HHS. So I don't quite understand, you know, the relationship here. You know, we're doing the same thing with vouchers for daycare, which is normally a HHS provision, and we're using Department of Education funds for vouchers. So I just don't understand the relationship here. And
sir?
Yes.
Could
go to the chair, please?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead,
Madam
Thomas.
Chair. Thank you. Anyway, to speak to that, adult education does not have the funds to normally go forward and do what my program is doing. What you're doing is if you are opening up this door to provide this mechanism to provide training, more adult education programs that have the students who want to go forward would have the ability to do the training within their facilities or with their partners. See, nobody's doing this. I'm the only program in the state that, due to the population I'm serving, I feel this is a wise use or investment of the adult education funds that I'm given from the state. You're not going to find any other adult education program probably willing to do this. What I'm doing is just saying, if you open up this door, you're going to see potentially more CNA trainings where adult education is taking the risk of training these people and getting them out there in the field.
Okay. Madam Chair, just quick follow-up. I think that the program sounds like an excellent program. My question is just where the funding should be coming from, and if this indeed should be a Department of Health and Human Services that's funding the program, or whether it should be Department of Education. So I'm sure you look into that, Representative Schumacher.
Yes, thank you.
Representative Schumacher. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one real quick clarification and then a quick comment after that. My understanding is that you are just opening the door to allow for the care providers. This is sort of an incentive-based sort of program where the care providers can identify someone and they say, you know what, we're going to hire this person, therefore we're going to reimburse you for the cost of this training. Am I hearing that correct?
Representative Schumacher, or probably Ms. Thomas?
Yep.
Not necessarily. It means that if we currently in Marshall, we have a very good relationship with our employers. And we have the people that are sometimes within our program or are referred by the care providers and saying we would like these people trained, then we go ahead and train them and then they go out and back into the facilities. Does that...
Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Miller.
So, Madam Chair, the point that I'm trying to make is that the connection is that there would be funds from the care provider that would go into this education. That's what this bill opens the door for, correct?
Madam Chair?
Go ahead, Ms. Thomas.
They would have the ability to be reimbursed out of the rate mechanism?
Right.
Yes.
Okay. And then just one quick comment, Madam Chair. I really think this is a good program. This is kind of a market-driven direction, and I appreciate that, and am the greatest woman in the state of Minnesota is my wife, and she is a testament to the sort of thing that you're talking about. I always tell people that she started out deboning turkeys, and there's nothing wrong with deboning turkeys. But she got an opportunity to be educated through similar programs to the point now to where she is a nurse and she's also the program director for the CMA program at a college. And so I totally support what you're saying, that this is a way to get people that can't normally afford to do it to get into the entry level into a track that brings them up through their career. And so I fully support this, and I think this is a fantastic bill, Representative Schumacher, and I thank you for bringing it forward.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Representative Urusel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I still like the idea of doing this, but we do need to find the right way to do it. So I have a question for the testifier. The bill caps out at 30%, so there would be a 70% that's not covered through this. And you were